Good evening, everyone. Again, this is Steve Nelson and Matthew Fraley from BreakpointTrades.com, and this is the weekend newsletter for August 9th, 2009, Part 2. We've already discussed Part 1, and again, make sure you listen to Part 1, especially if you are a swing trader, because we cover the weekly charts, which pertain more to the intermediate and longer-term aspects of the market. We're starting out showing the first chart here, which is the chart of the Dow back in 1929 and 30. I'm just putting it on here again because we showed it in the weekly chart as a reminder for those of you who haven't looked at part one to go look at it because we discuss it in depth there. But simply put, what we saw here was a quick fall back in the 29 time frame, a 5-month retrace 50% before the bear market began to take over again and move down. There's a lot of similarities between what transpired back then and today. Again, is everything the same? No. Are we trading off of this premise? No. We trade off of our intermediate trends, okay? But we like to bring out similar situations. History is a guide, and what we're seeing transpire in the macro environment, the fundamental environment, is quite similar to what occurred in the 29-30 time frame. And the potential technical ramifications, chart movements, also have similarities. I won't go any further than that. If you want further comments, listen to part one. Now let's move into the daily chart of the S&P, and here we're going to cover in this section indexes on the daily time frame down to the smaller time frame, and then Matt's going to wrap up the commodity section. So the second chart we're showing tonight is the daily chart of the S&P. Again, this is a chart we've shown many times, and that is that we see primary wave B, which is labeled in green, as unfolding, still unfolding off of the March lows. And within that, we have labeled it as a major wave A in purple, B in purple, and we are currently in major wave C of purple. Now, the question is, will primary wave C, or a major wave C, pardon me, subdivide as an ABC? So far, the largest pullback we've seen in the S&P off the July 8th lows is a measly 16 points. So it's been a very strong initial leg up, even stronger in terms of the lack of pullbacks than our initial leg up in March, even though in March we certainly had a very strong move as well in terms of points. But we just haven't had any type of pullback in this particular leg. So the question is, are we near or completing intermediate wave A? Our thoughts are we are close if we haven't done so already. Then the question is, will we get a pullback in terms of intermediate wave B that sets a higher low, does, in other words, a partial retracement of the leg up off of July 8th before coming up and making another high to complete this pattern? Again, only a move that comes down and takes out the 869 low back in June or on July 8th would serve to negate this particular outlook. So at this time, we're somewhat cautious on the lookout for a pullback. But again, we don't have any sell signals. We're not short the market. We're just cautious in the fact that the market has come a long way in a short period of time, and we are starting to see some divergences appear even now on the daily time frame. Now we see some daily RSI divergence that may be forming. Again, until we get a clear reversal, the trend remains up. Simple as that. Now let's move on and look at a couple of the intraday charts on the S&P. Here's the chart I've shown a couple of times for those of you looking to do some type of swing trading off of a pseudo-mechanical system. Here is a simple mechanical system with a moving average trio, 10, 20, and 50 EMA. When the 10 crosses above the 20 and then they both cross above the 50, it's a buy trigger. You can see that this has worked very nicely on this last advance, and it should. these systems are going to work good in trending markets. Okay. However, if we go into a overlapping market that we saw in May, June, and July for the lowest part, you're not going to get these type of results. So again, if you're a swing trader, you've got to play the markets in accordance with your objectives and risk tolerance, and you'll go through some whipsaws just like you get some losing trades on the mechanical systems, but they are certainly going to catch the big moves. So this is just a simple guide, and you can see that as of now, we have had no sell signal off of this system since the crossover that occurred probably around the 14th of July. Now let's take a closer look at some of the trend lines on the S&P and SPY. I'm just showing the SPY here because it does a better job of showing the gaps. And one thing I want to talk about is the gap up that we saw on Friday. And that gap up on the S&P is around 997. The question that comes out now is, was that an exhaustion gap? Okay? And if it is, we're going to come down and fill that gap and break below this lower trend line and at least lead to some type of pullback. But until that gap is filled and we break below this little trend line area, we have to, be on the lookout for another potential push up. So again, I don't have any count on this particular chart. What I want to point out is the open gap from Friday. That happens to be the 10th gap that remains open off of the March lows. Quite an extended number of gaps. Odds would favor, okay, that these gaps get filled before we go, or a couple of these gaps get filled before we have another gap up open. But who knows? This is one heck of a market advance. As you can see, though, we still have some negative divergence in place on the RSI and MACD off of this leg, but yet the market's shrugging off overbought and divergence for the time being and continuing to push higher. That's why I always state overbought and divergence by themselves are not sell signals. Let's move on now and look at the S&P. Here's a different view of the S&P on the 30-minute time frame, just real clean, showing the rising trend line that I had drawn. We broke below that. We've back-tested it once and now twice. This trend line remains valid. Needless to say, the market is respecting that trend line. The other thing I want to point out is that we went from oversold on Thursday on the 30-minute regular stochastics to overbought. Again, the 30-minute stochastics, 15-minute stochastics, as well as the 60-minute stochastics are decent guidelines, okay, for those of you with shorter-term trading horizons. The next chart is another view with a count on the 30-minute S&P. Again, this count assumes that wave 5 has been put in place on the S&P. Again, we've seen this wave 5 extend. Again, we need to see a solid reversal breaking below a previous low, which is 992.49, to suggest that we've got a trend reversal. Again, though, remember, we've got that open gap. And if that gap gets filled, we break this rising little trend line, then the odds favor that we will come down and break below that previous pivot low. I've included some Fibonacci retracements on this chart for you to view, the first one being the 23.6 Fibonacci retracement. The next chart is the SDS, which is on the 60-minute time frame, and for those of you who are not familiar, it is the inverse to the S&P, a 2x leveraged fund. And again, it's really the mirror image of what we're seeing on the S&P above. We're seeing a bullish falling channel in place with positive divergence, and yet it continues. The market continues to honor this channel. I guess a low-risk buy entry for a trader would be down at the lower end of the channel, or a trigger could be a decisive break through the channel. Again, should we break out of this channel, we're likely to get an initial leg up, okay, and then typically it's followed by some type of pullback or retest of the channel. So if playing this, trade it in accordance with your trading objectives and risk tolerance, and don't be hesitant about taking some profits should it break out of this pattern. At this time, it has not. The next chart is a 15-minute chart of the S&P, just showing the action over the past, say, 5 trading days or so. Again, you can see that we continue to make higher highs and higher lows, but the in terms of momentum, we are losing some momentum. We are not climbing as rapidly as previously we saw. But again, here on Friday, we had a little falling wedge type pattern, and we got oversold on the 30-60-minute time frames, and boom, we ratcheted up again. Now we're starting to pull back. I've also included some Fibonacci ratios in here off of shorter time frames as a potential guide for you to follow. The next chart is a very short-term chart showing what has transpired really just over the last couple of days, in particular what transpired on Friday. And as you can see on Friday, we thrust up off of those lows on Thursday. We actually had an initial leg up on Thursday, then we had a thrust up. When you have a thrust up, that's typically part of a wave three. We went up. You can clearly see, and I don't have them labeled here, a third wave topped out here where the left shoulder is. We had a fourth wave pullback and another move up to complete 5 waves up. Now we have a potential little head and shoulders pattern that may be forming. We may need another move up to test this right shoulder area, but a break of this neckline would measure down to this support area down around the 1,000 to 1,002 area in terms of a shorter term timing pattern. So we got a little bearish head and shoulders top potentially in place, which would be triggered with a break below the previous low around 10.10. Again, if you do this, you would put a stop in somewhere above this previous high area, maybe around the 10.14-ish area, something like that. Trade in accordance with your objectives. This is just a short-term chart. The next chart is a daily view of the Dow. Here I'm showing the megaphone top that still appears to be in place, acting as resistance. And it's tying now into the 38% retracement of the entire move down. So off of the October 2007 highs, as I've said, the Dow has now retraced 38%. And again, we don't have any negative divergence clear cut in place on a lot of our indicators, MACD. We have slight little RSI divergence on Friday's push, but the RSI previous to that has made new recovery highs. So again, we could be setting up for a pullback, then a push up that sets up a clear negative divergence, allowing for a deeper type selling spree to unwind. But at this stage, we're up against some resistance, but no clear sell signals in place other than the 14.3 stochastics. It's pointing down, but it's yet to cross below 80. But we just haven't seen any type of impulsive move down yet out of the major indexes, especially the blue chips, the S&P and Dow. Here's another view of the Dow 30-minute, very similar to the S&P above. I've shifted the 3-4. Again, don't trade the count, trade the pattern. Here again, we came up against the resistance area, and we're starting to pull back. I would view support at the lower blue trend line along with the green trend line below. Again, is this going to be a shallow pullback and another push-up, or does this complete our short-term move up and we're due for a deeper pullback? We'll let the market be the guide. Next chart is the DXD, very similar to the SDS above. Again, no need to comment any further other than looking to play the lower boundary or a breakout of the pattern. Now let's move on and look at the NASDAQ. This is a chart I showed on Thursday night. I talked about the NASDAQ being up against trendline resistance. You can see the NASDAQ and the NDX first and foremost, did not confirm Friday's highs in the blue chip indexes. The S&P and Dow made new recovery highs. The NASDAQ composite and the NDX did not. Now, that's only one day. It could do that, okay, in the coming day or two. But for now, that is a potential intermarket divergence that we need to take note of. And maybe it's an indication that we're going to get some type of retracement occurring here. You can see the NASDAQ is starting to roll over. The MACD at this point hasn't got across, but it is weakening in terms of its uptrend, yet we have no clear-cut sell signal. I talk about momentum waning. That by itself is not a sell signal other than the fact that it's stymieing out here. In other words, okay, it may be consolidating for another move up or consolidating for some type of pullback. I put out a hypothetical scenario that would allow for potentially a 38 to 50% pullback in minor wave B, or I should say intermediate wave B, and then another push up in intermediate wave C, and potentially that serves to create some negative divergence on our indicators. Again, this is hypothetical. We'll take it one day at a time, but one thing is clear is that over the past week and a half, especially on the NASDAQ, okay, on the NASDAQ and the NDX, upside momentum has been waning. The next chart is a 30-minute view of the NASDAQ. Here I show breaking down out of the channel and now some horizontal lateral consolidations. Perhaps we'll have a little ABC, ABC, ABC as a as we work off some of our overbought, allowing the oscillators to reset. But I would focus in, if you're a shorter-term trader, on some of these dashed trend lines as guides. And then I've also attached some of the Fibonacci retracements. They're upside down, but the 61.8 there would be the 38.2% retracement. I'll correct that and put it on the blog in the future. Again, that area would be a potential target should we get some deeper selling to occur on a pullback. The next chart's just the daily chart of the Qs. Here again, you can see we're up against this trend line resistance, plugging along right up here. Again, no further comments necessary other than the fact that the Qs, like the composite above, have lost some upside momentum and have been consolidating. They clearly had a sell signal on the 5-3 stochastics unwinding. We did get the RSI moving below 70, and we've seen a little bit of distribution in our volume patterns. But nothing of meaningful pullback yet. We still have the moving averages underneath, the 20 and 50, with the 20 rising. Should we get a pullback, that too would be an initial target for support, the rising 20-day moving average. Then here's a 60-minute view of the Qs, very similar to the NASDAQ above. No need to go into that any further. I also have some Fibonacci retracement targets, should the high be in place. And now let's move on to a couple of the indicators. Here is the NASDAQ bullish percent, followed by the New York Stock Exchange bullish percent. Again, they are flattening out somewhat, but that's normal at elevated levels. No sell signal. They're still above our 10 EMA, which is a guideline for us. But in terms of point and figure, which I covered on Thursday night, we would like to see a move above 70 and a move back below 70 on the New York Stock Exchange. The NASDAQ, I would prefer to see a move below the 10 EMA or a 6-point reversal. The New York Stock Exchange trades a little differently on the bullish percentage than the NASDAQ in that a move below 70 after moving above is typically a point and figure sell signal. But again, that's going to line up fairly well with the 10 EMA. So those are some guidelines. I covered that on Thursday. Again, these are intermediate term guides, and they, like the New York Stock Summation Weeklies, are very good at identifying intermediate-term trends and helping us stay on the right side of those trends, as well as helping us identify where we are in field position. if we are at very high bullish percents, okay, historically speaking, we don't have as much upside in terms of movement versus being dramatically oversold. As you can see down in March, we were at low levels, allowing for more upside move. Just because you're at elevated levels by themselves does not mean it's a sell signal. It just means that risk is greater up here for a large advance than it would be when the bullish percents are low. But bullish percents low by themselves are not a reason to buy. We need to see movement up. Trying to pick bottoms and tops is dangerous to your wealth. Now let's move on and look at the daily summation indexes. We talked about the weekly summation indexes. These tend to track it fairly nicely. We use a very quick little 1 and 3 EMA for signals here. So I guess it's a little bit shorter term in nature, but they do tend to capture the major trends. But again, you can see that these are still on buy signals, but at this time, we have not seen we have seen upside momentum begin to wane somewhat as the summation index is attempting to flatten out as the McClellan oscillator is also pulling back, not making higher highs. The daily of the NASI, same thing. And the last couple of charts I want to talk about are the VIX. Here you can see what appears to be a potential little bullish falling wedge. I talked about that on the weekly time frame. This is a nice clean line chart. Again, the one thing that we can say is the VIX is not confirming the latest move up in the market. We're not seeing lower levels on VIX. That by itself is just something to watch. It's not a reason to go out and necessarily sell. You want to see price turn down for a sell. Just something to be aware of. And then finally, I've got a couple more charts on the VIX. What I'm showing on the next chart is the fact that the Bollinger Bands are beginning to pinch together. Now, it looks like they've got some time to come together and pinch together. But normally, as the Bollinger Bands begin to pinch together, and that occurs when you have a narrow range occurring in the particular index, stock, or indicator you're following, it is subsequently followed by a bigger move. So we'll keep an eye on this, just another indicator to follow as the days progress. And then finally, the 60-minute chart on the VIX shows what is potentially a little inverse bullish head and shoulders pattern forming here. So let's keep an eye on this and see if we get a thrust up above, say, the 26.5 area. Again, the VIX by itself does not, a movement up in the VIX measures volatility. Now, over time, it tends to be nicely correlated inversely correlated with the S&P, but we've seen instances in that even recently where the VIX has shot up and the S&P has not followed. So this, first and foremost, is a measure of volatility. But over time, like the relationship with the dollar, it tends to have a pretty good inverse relationship. So keep that in mind. I'm going to turn it back over to Matt to wrap up part two.
Okay, thanks, Steve. And the next chart is a weekly chart of the SSE, Shanghai Stock Exchange Index. China, as you know, China, Chinese stocks have had a really strong rally as well. And however, the way the media talks, you would think Chinese stocks are back to highs, but you see on this weekly chart, the SSEC has basically retraced 38% from the 2007 highs. So it's basically about where the S&P 500 is, and so it's near some resistance here. Just wanted to show you that. Next, we're moving on into commodities. As you can see from the table, general commodities and commodity stocks were up anywhere from 2.5% to almost 3% last week. Crude oil rallied 2% last week to close about $71. Oil and energy stocks were mixed. Gold was up just slightly, about 0.2% only, while gold stocks were up a little over 1.5%. The other commodities, silver was lately has been much stronger than gold, up almost 5%. And some of the other commodities have really had a nice move. copper, platinum, as you can see, etc. So let's go ahead and move on quickly through these commodity charts. Really, on all these charts, nothing has literally changed. The daily chart of the CRB here with my wave count, again, nothing's new. The CRB made a fifth wave divergent bottom in March, and it has been meandering up in a choppy countertrend rally fashion. You can see it really has the same wave count as our current market. The top in June was wave A in parentheses, and then we've had a wave B pullback in July, and we're now in some kind of wave C up. And whenever wave C completes, then the commodity should put in a significant top, and that'll probably also correspond with the S&P 500 and the general market putting in a major top as well. As you know, commodities and general market are moving together. So again, nothing's changed here with the count. CRB weekly, I discussed this in the previous newsletter. The point was that commodities have rebounded from the March lows, but they are far away from the 38% Fibonacci retracement. Just shows you how decimated they were. So, next is the weekly chart of the CRX. This was also in the previous week, the weekend newsletter where we went over the big picture charts. Commodity stocks have bounced just around with the general market, and if they move up higher, that 50% Fibonacci retracement could be a good target. And crude oil, I didn't really change anything on this chart from last week. It's still kind of riding this broken uptrend line here in black. If it wants to move up higher, that's allowed, that's fine. But major resistance if it moves higher would be I consider that 38% Fibonacci retracement from the July 2008 highs to be major resistance up at $78 if it has more another move up here. The weekly chart, again, nothing's changed from our long-term analysis. If we move higher, the 38% Fibonacci retracement would be a good target, that horizontal red line. And if it wanted to move higher than that, so be it. But a back test of that broken weekly channel would be logical as well. Either way, though, longer term, it looks like a countertrend rally. It's too V-ish. Eventually, I think it's going to come down again. With the general market, if it truly isn't just a bear market rally and we go down again in a market sell-off. Copper, there's a weekly chart of copper. I think I covered this in the previous update as well. Copper's rebounded strongly from its late 2008 highs, but it's a pretty steep move here. And so it doesn't look too sustainable. Eventually, it's going to have a pullback here. Natural gas, someone wanted me to show this chart. Here's a natural gas ETF. It's kind of in a triangle pattern here, so watch the direction it breaks. I'm not at UNG is a ETF for natural gas, and Steve and I don't trade it. It doesn't trade very well, and so it's just in a triangle pattern. Could break to the upside or downside here. The way it's been trading, wouldn't doubt if it breaks to the downside again. Here's a weekly chart of natural gas. I'm not really going to discuss it, so let's move on. Next, moving on to gold. Here's the daily chart of gold from last week. Again, nothing's changed. Gold continues to form into this symmetrical triangle pattern. Everyone appears to be aware of that. And major other support and resistance is defined by the converging trend lines of the triangle. And outside of the triangle, if it were to break to the upside, of course, major, major resistance is the March 2008 highs. Around 1,000, a little over 1,000. Now, textbook-wise, the correct labeling on the triangle would be an ABCDE, and it'd actually be a bullish chart with maybe a pullback and a wave E and then a breakout later on. However, we'll just have to see. It doesn't have to play out this way. Really, let's just respect the direction that it breaks. The U.S. dollar appears that it could be trying to put in a major bottom here, and if that does, it's hard to imagine gold just breaking out from here. And the Elliott Wave people out there, like Prechter, have a bearish view on gold. And so, you know, when it's in this triangle, we're going to say it could go either way. But if that U.S. dollar really starts to bottom and moves up, then it's going to be hard to see the bullish count play out. So let's just keep an eye on it and see what happens. The commercial net short for gold is also getting up there. It's around 225,000 net short, I think. And major tops in gold tend to occur when it's between about 225 to 250. So it's getting up there. It's not in a good place for it to have an extended move up. Generally, gold puts in major bottoms when the commercial net short is around 100,000 net contracts short or less. And we're far from that. And the next is just two gold ETFs, GLD and DGP, which is the 2x gold ETF. Again, logically, they're in the same pattern, these triangle patterns. So, nothing more to discuss there. The next two charts are weekly charts of gold. Again, these are when in last week's newsletter. Nothing new. The first chart shows the bullish case for gold, with it in potentially an inverse head and shoulder pattern, and that would break to the upside. This pattern is only validated if gold were to break the neckline. So, quite far away from that. Gold has formed a series of higher lows in the triangle. If it breaks the uptrend line of the triangle, then it's probably negated. It's that simple. And the next chart is basically similar to the Elliott wave count, bearish count. It has gold eventually pulling back here in a wave 2, which you see in red, possibly even to that long-term uptrend line, up in the low 600s, mid to 600 level. And that would freak all the gold bugs out, but it's still a potential count. And if the U.S. dollar puts in a major bottom and rallies strongly, then that would be a fundamental reason for that to occur. So we're leaving both cases out here. Now, let's take a look at the U.S. dollar, because this is quite interesting, and this is the key to the markets, we think. The next chart's a daily chart of the U.S. dollar, the same chart as last week, and the U.S. dollar appears to be putting in a fifth wave divergent bottom. You can see the positive divergence via the MACD. You can clearly count five waves to the downside. It's in a downtrend channel here. And so if the U.S. dollar starts rallying from here, then a significant bottom may be put in. And the U.S. dollar had a strong rally on Friday. You can see that big candle there, and it closed right in resistance. So it could just start declining from here. But if it continues to move up, then the fifth wave bottom might be put in. And it's hard to imagine commodities continually going up strongly if that happens. Now, since really over the last couple of years, the S&P 500, the general stock market, and commodities have been moving inversely, have been moving inverse to the U.S. dollar. They don't have to do it lockstep day after day. So we had a lot of questions on the blog about, well, the U.S. dollar rallied on Friday, and so did the stock market. Why did that happen? Well, you know, most of the time they're inversely correlated, but there can be a week or two at a time when they're not, when they don't move together. But generally, they move together in the intermediate term, and so you can't read too much into one day. But if the dollar puts in a significant bottom, I think that would also give trouble to the general stock market as well, and I think Steve agrees with me. So this is something to keep an eye on. The next chart is a chart of UUP. Steve did his chart. It's the U.S. dollar ETF. He has it drawn in a bullish falling wedge. And you have nice positive divergence here. And a little Elliott wave tutorial is that fifth wave bottoms generally have positive divergence. So this is something to keep an eye on. The dollar is trying to put in some kind of bottom in here. So that's something to think about if you are super bullish on the market, because that will weigh on the market if that comes to play. Next is the weekly chart of the U.S. dollar. Again, nothing has changed from my comments. You can see the U.S. dollar weekly chart. You can see that I have it forming a higher low ultimately. All right, folks, sorry about that. I got distracted for a second. This weekly chart of the U.S. dollar is the same count as we have been maintaining for months. We think that everything on the weekly and monthly chart of the U.S. dollar looks like that it's going to form a higher low instead of crashing to new lows at this time. So it looks like some kind of ABC formation is forming, with the highs in March as wave A, and then the pullback that we're in now that could be bottoming, it would be major wave B, and then after that bottom is in, then you start up in a major wave C, which... And so that's what we see. Plus, as we've discussed quite recently, the sentiment the number of people bullishing on U.S. dollar is extremely low. I think it's 3-5%. And those aren't levels that, you know, where the dollar would just melt down to new lows from. You know, when everyone's looking for the dollar to die, go to new lows, it doesn't happen. I mean, that's the paradigm with the whole stock market. You know, whenever the whole masses think something's going to happen, it generally doesn't. So sentiment also favors a scenario like this. Now moving on to gold stocks. Just quickly going to discuss these here. The daily chart of GDX, it's forming into a triangle pattern. So a big move could be on the horizon here. I'm not going to go into the 15 and 30 minute charts of GDX. And here's the BP GDM, the bullish percent gold miners index. I think the thing to watch here is you can see that the bullish percent index crossed over the 8-day moving average back in mid-July, and that's been a pretty good guide over the last year or so. If it crosses back to the downside, I think that would be a sell signal for gold stocks. And lastly is the GDM gold ratio. It's basically a ratio of gold stocks to gold metal, and I have gold plotted at the bottom of the chart in gold. You can see the symmetrical triangle on gold, and you can see the ratio is in an uptrend channel. The thing to note about the ratio between gold stocks and gold metal is that they both do better whenever gold stocks are leading relative to gold metal. It has been this way since 2001, ever since I've been following gold. That relationship has never waned, and gold stocks have been generally outperforming here. However, if this ratio ever breaks down here and breaks this uptrend line, I think that would be very negative for both gold stocks and gold metal. For now, it can continue to move up inside the pattern, but it's just something to keep an eye on in the intermediate term. So, really, that's it. Some other admin comments. Again, there will be some new improvements on the blog tonight. And also regarding the watch list, folks, I have not had a chance to update that on the weekend yet. I will be doing that either late tonight or early in the morning. I'll probably be adding some new longs, maybe a couple short ideas. But with the market where it is right now, especially for longs, you got to keep a tight leash, I think. You got to be a little pickier. Especially for breakouts, if you pick the ones that are taking tremendous volume that is above their 60-day average volume. If you have another one that's just breaking out on so-so volume, and you got another one that has much higher volume, we'll take that one. Be very picky here, and you might need to keep a tight leash on them. Right now is not the time that you might, where you can give big wide stops to it. If the market pulls back nicely, and it appears that it's some kind of wave B pullback, and the market gets to unwind some of its overbought nature, then I think we can give some more room to new longs. But right now, you got to be a little cautious and maybe be on the lookout to take some profits quickly, etc. We've had a lot of longs in the watch list. We've picked this uptrend quite well. We're taking advantage of it. But I'm a little cautious about throwing too many new longs. I don't want to get you guys trapped. Our whole point here is to keep you safe, etc. So that does it. We will have a great evening, and we will see you on the blog this week. Thank you.